As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
Welcome to this episode of the Elite Advisor Podcast. Today, we're going to be hanging out with Mark Osborne. I was looking forward to this episode because we talk a lot about business owners. Mark is a SEPA. He works with a lot of companies from building their exits to helping them through their exits. And I find a lot of advisors are intimidated by this market because they don't feel like they're the expert in everything. Today, Mark and I are going to unpack how you can have different conversations with your clients that are business owners, or also develop a framework and conversation so when you meet a prospect that's a business owner, you can draw them in so they have confidence that you know what you're talking about. You don't need to be the expert in everything, but you need to know how to talk about the process and how you can help guide them. You need to be relevant for your business owner clients. Let's jump in. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I'm excited about this conversation. It is a topic of the business that I think has intimidated me from the beginning, and it was something I had to say, okay, do I want to lean into working with business owners, talking about exits? And I find a lot of advisors would love to be in that space, sit in that room confidently, but it can be intimidating from the beginning. So I'd love to start your background. How did you get in the business? How did you find your lane?
Yeah.
And how long did it take you to find your lane?
So I'm fortunate that for 25 or more years, my hobby has also been my job. Like, I'm really sort of passionate and obsessed with, as I call it, the persuasive arts, marketing, sales, communication, all of those things. Over those 25 years, I've been blessed to work with, two people in a garage startups that went on to have some successful exits and transitions themselves, as well as multi-billion multinational corporations, Nike, Hulu, General Motors, and folks like that. And really spanning everything from, brand strategy, like getting that message right, to the product marketing and kind of rev ops, kind of some of the technical infrastructure and just sort of the mechanics of marketing, and even running sales teams, 8-9-figure budgets, dozens of folks spread all around the country. And one of the things that I noticed was a lot of the sort of tools and insights that companies growing from kind of 1 to 100 million need, they don't often have the resources to get. And in a lot of the corporate environments, they're so overwhelmed with just sort of the largesse of the bureaucracy of being a large company that you don't get a chance to do some of the kind of innovative things that would really move the needle. But for smaller businesses, they're missing just sort of the basic knowledge and strategy and foundations. And so I've really been passionate about taking all that I learned from my MBA and working with those larger companies and helping smaller companies grow and to use that. And in that process, was working with a number of different advisors who were also sort of functional experts in their area, maybe operations or finance. And they were seeing more and more companies preparing for exit because, as you've probably heard before, this concept of the silver tsunami, something like $10 trillion in wealth is going to pass hands over the next 5 to 10 years as one generation of owners either sells to private equity or their employees or passes to the next generation. But as they were working with companies in that space, they said, so often marketing and sales represents a big opportunity for them to grow the value of their business and maximize the multiple that they can get when they sell, even grow the EBITDA or revenue prior to sell. But most marketers can't spell EBITDA generally just sort of, kind of run campaigns and test and, trial and error, test and learn, and aren't able to really build that enterprise value that companies are needing at that sort of context. So I took my 25 years of experience and, you know, really sort of readjusted it specifically to that context of businesses preparing to sell within 1 to 5 years. And it actually changes pretty dramatically the way that you approach the things that you need to do. And so that's what I've really been focused on for about the last year, working with a number of certified exit planning advisors. As I mentioned, I'm also a SEPA, as well as other advisors, both wealth advisors and other kind of functional advisors to help those businesses preparing for sale. And it can be intimidating as you think about, for most entrepreneurs, 70% or more of their wealth is tied up in their business. And so as you think about, you know, a transition, whether it's a sale or a recapitalization or whatever, it's likely to be the most, you know, sort of foundational event in their life. And really not only their life, but even potentially their children and their children's children. And if it goes wrong, you know, there's a lot of risk there. The good news is that there is a lot of sort of solid training out there. And I referenced the SEPA certification from the Exit Planning Institute. And there's a lot of other great folks out there that are, you know, doing good work. But it also requires that you have some of that gravitas of having worked with businesses making those, you know, 8-9 figure kind of decisions in order to feel comfortable. But the only way to do it is to do it.
That's right.
But that said, you don't have to do it all. And that's the where I have really focused my practice is specifically being that domain expert on marketing and sales systems that will improve the value of your enterprise and maximize the multiple, de-risk the business for a potential purchaser, make it more transferable, more attractive, all of those things. But I'm not a tax expert. I'll never be a tax expert. And when you realize that you don't have to be all things in this very complex process, you can come in with the expertise that you have and then really add, you know, value there. And there's an interesting stat that 70% of entrepreneurs, and then this 70% number comes up a lot in all of these stats, but 70% of entrepreneurs that sell a business change their wealth advisor afterwards. When looking at why, it's so often that the wealth advisor said, oh, you're thinking about selling your business? Well, good luck with that. And when you're done, come back to me and let's invest that money. And then in the course of going through the transition, the sale, the entrepreneur, the business owner came to realize I should expect more from my wealth advisor. And there are people that have more expertise than are just going to sit back and wait for me to bring them a deposit for them to invest. And so just proactively sort of leaning in with your clients that are, you know, potentially going into those conversations and saying, well, how are you preparing for that? And how can I help? And because there's so many moving parts to the transition from what are you going to do with your life afterwards? You know, maybe you've been working in this business 10 hours a day, 6 days a week for 20 years. You're not going to be happy playing golf every day. Right? You're going to need something else to spend your time on. And just kind of leaning in on some of those conversations really opens the door for, you know, for wealth advisors to play a bigger role. Likewise, it also can sort of guide them where they have personal interest or professional acumen to develop a set of skills that will be more valuable to their clients, whether it's thinking about, you know, guiding that mental transition, if they're, you know, stronger on soft skills, or thinking about how they can become more knowledgeable about tax advantages if they have, you know, some of that acumen. Not that they're necessarily going to become, you know, a legal tax advisor, but just to know some of those basic blocking and tackling to fill that role can really give them the confidence to engage more. And the stats would show that they really should engage more if they're going to, you know, keep those clients.
Yeah, I'd be curious your thoughts on, I remember sitting in rooms with clients and even for some of my own businesses over the years, getting the question, why are you doing this? Like, is the goal to sell this, or is this like a lifelong multi-generational business?
Right.
and being in those conversations, realizing as an advisor, you should always know what's the goal, because the decisions are probably totally different if you're trying to exit in 3 to 5 years versus I want to grow this company and leave it to my kids.
That's right.
What's your response? Is that something that you would agree that every advisor with a business owner, entrepreneur, or client should ask that right away and maybe just keep asking it?
So there's a phrase in the EPI Exit Planning Institute community that exit planning is just good business strategy. And in fact, I think that that's true. And because if you have a clear picture of what's the long-term goal and you can communicate that to all of your advisors, then you have people making the right decisions based on those goals. So yes, I do think it's important for people to know their clients' context and what they're operating in and what they're really trying to accomplish, both long-term and short-term. And the only way you know is to ask. And what we oftentimes say is, you know, to think about it, it doesn't have to be static either, because maybe this was their plan when they started it, but a few years in, their kids, you know, found other career paths that didn't involve running the family business. And so although they originally wanted it to be a multi-generational thing, now it probably doesn't look like that, for reasons. And so people often will sort of say, like, you know, think about it on an annual basis and then reflect on it on a quarterly basis, so that, you know, every quarter, if you're running your business correctly, at any time you'd be ready for that unexpected offer that could be life-changing for you. But if you haven't been running it that way, when that call comes and you have to pass, you might be passing on the best offer you'll ever get. Alternatively, it might be a lowball offer and you wouldn't know unless you'd done the work. And so by kind of, you know, operating your business as if you plan to sell it, it's just a great way to run it, because then you're prepared for those calls. Also, the things that make a business, you know, sort of unpleasant to run are also the things that make it hard to sell. Conversely, what makes a business great to run are also the things that make it attractive and easy to sell, like owner dependence. If the whole business is dependent on you, you can't take a vacation. Also, no one's going to want to buy it, so it's not very valuable. It's not transferable. Customer concentration. If you're highly dependent on one or two customers, that probably keeps you up at night worrying about, well, what's going to happen if they leave? That's also one of the biggest, you know, blockers to someone else being able to buy your business, because they have those same worries that what if there's one or two customers left? So by tackling some of those things in your business strategy, you make it a more, you know, enjoyable business to own, run, more efficient, improve your margins and EBITDA. And also, you're protecting your largest asset by making it more transferable.
Yeah, as you're explaining this, I'm trying to think for all the advisors listening, like practically, Mark's not telling you to be a tax expert. You know, Mark's not telling you to, you have to go get the SEPA tomorrow. Practically for me, obviously, I think that knowledge helps over time. But if I had like a framework that I knew for every business owner client, I always want to know, are they building to sell? If you as an advisor were able to explain what Mark just explained, meaning you should always be ready to sell, and it makes your business healthy and good to run. Like, I think even just that conversation spoken directly gives a business owner confidence, like, oh, you know what I'm talking about. That there's probably some kind of script or framework you can walk a business owner through that would at least give them the confidence of like, oh, well, you're thinking of this and you've obviously been around this conversation before, even if you fall short of being like the expert executor in any area. Because somehow, I think, to go back what you said at the very beginning, like, we have to be relevant somehow. If you were just the person that's like relying on the fact you've been their advisor for 10 years, meeting with them once a year, and then you hope that they're going to give you the check when the time comes, like, I know for me, I just, that seems just too risky.
That's right. Well, and the stats back that up. 70% of folks that sell a business fire their wealth advisor afterwards. And I think you're absolutely right. There are very, you know, well-documented stable frameworks. So like within EPI, they talk about there's three legs of the stool. There's the business leg, like, is the business ready to be sold? There's the financial leg, like, the business selling give you the finances you need to sustain your life, which is probably where most, you know, wealth advisors and financial advisors live. But then there's also the personal leg of, well, what are you going to do after you sell personally? And when I first started studying this and learning about it, I thought that piece, like, what do you care? Like, why, you know, what gives you the right to sort of ask me, ask any, you know, founder or entrepreneur that question? But interestingly, the biggest reason why deals don't transact is because the seller gets cold feet. And the reason they get cold feet is they don't know what they're going to do after they, they sell the business and retire, and they, you know, have sort of an identity crisis around it. Whereas if someone in their deal team, maybe that financial advisor, had just helped them think through, well, what are things you could do? You could start a foundation. You could, you know, move on to another, you know, stage of your career and do something different. You could, you know, this, that, and the other. Helping them think through so that they have that clear plan gives that business owner the confidence. And I see that as the type of thing that, you know, a lot of advisors, what makes them good at their job is they have empathy and good communication skills and, you know, sort of logical thinking and can guide people through decision making. And that's a lot of the skills that are needed in this context. And so there's an opportunity for them to add a lot of value to their clients as they think about that.
The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you.
Yeah, we years ago, again, business owners can be great clients. I think if you are an advisor or equipped to have a business owner conversations, there's so much tax strategies, like there's so much value to be added there. I do find a lot of advisors are intimidated to break into it. And I think at some point you just have to enter that space. And there's a lot of business owners that are better off even with what you know today, because there's a good chance they don't have an advisor at all.
That's right.
But we've incorporated into our planning process, if you own a business, we have a new category, we call it business strength. Huh. Meaning our framework forces us to ask the questions as opposed to just hoping we bring it up, because it's just as important as your cash flow, your tax strategy, because this business owner's like, is everything documented well? Do you have good, clean data up to date? Like as I went down this path, I was like, I'm not asking all these vital questions. I'm assuming that their personal financial plan is just overflowing on their business. I'm like, no, that's a whole distinct bucket that we have to somehow evaluate. At times bring experts in to help, because we aren't going to be, you know, have the designations we may need to have. But I do think you can still quarterback and make yourself relevant enough by routinely bringing it up.
I think that's very wise. And the other thing that I think that advisors should not be, you know, sort of shy about is meeting the other folks that, you know, are advising their clients. And having a shared dialogue and communication to make sure that they're on the same page. If you're all working on behalf of the client, you shouldn't worry about, well, this is my part of his business or of managing or adding value to him. Instead, really understand how you can dovetail well with that, you know, essentially the board of advisors that they've built for their life, some of which interact with their business, some of which interact with their personal finances.
Yeah, one thing that was a game changer for us is as soon as I broke away from selling insurance or selling investments, like those were the only two things I could do. And we got into 5 or 6 years ago, planning and consulting fees.
Yeah.
Meaning if I'm your advisor, I don't have to sell you something for this to be a good thing. Because back in the day, I was like, I need the assets. Like if you don't give me the assets to manage, how many meetings am I going to have? Because you're telling me you're planning on starting another company or you're going to buy a bunch of real estate. And now I'm your advisor trying to talk you out of those things because I need to make sure what I get big enough to justify it. So for all the advisors listening, if you are brave enough to get away from kind of the typical path and get into where you believe you can charge a fee for your time and ideas, this is so ripe for that because they want what you have to offer. But if you seem to be this point of friction and your goal is to sell a bunch of whole life in an islet and just put all their money in an S&P fund, I think you can turn away some really great entrepreneurs that are willing to have you on the team because you seem now to be less of an advisor and more of like the salesperson.
That's right.
What's your experience been with that as you've been around other advisors?
Totally true. And just as you said, like the path that you carved out, which is moving away from, well, I've got these things to sell, so turns out I'm always going to think they're a good idea for you.
It's always.
As you develop, and I think that you're right, again, in that it doesn't have to be that you build out a giant portfolio of things to sell. Instead, your insight and advice is actually worthwhile and it's worth something. And you can build a practice around that, or at least, you know, some component of it that allows you to really have that sort of fiduciary duty of I'm guiding them to their best outcome, whether it is with this product or not with this product, and really sort of, you know, having that lane and that path. And a lot of times I see people sort of do it in parallel, where they'll say, I'll offer advisory for you on just helping you make good decisions. If we collaboratively determine that this is a good product for you, I can also represent those products. But yeah, having that sort of clear distinction of I'm now moving into, you know, my salesperson hat for that role, and just being transparent about that with your clients is a really good path for folks, where you don't have to, you know, totally give up what, you know, might be keeping the lights on today.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these people are very smart and have good instincts. They're about to sell a business, which I don't know of the total population of people, how many people have actually gone through a successful exit, less than 0.5%. I mean, it's a small group. And if you think that somehow you're getting them, you know, because you're not, you're using the billionaire bank or the life insurance, like, just tell them it's life insurance and tell them why. And if it's like, hey, you should probably have some liquid money, let's put this over in the investments. Yep. Hey, but let's not forget to talk about, like, tell me about the real estate. Why do you want to do that? Do you want to start another business? Is that because, like, you're passionate about it, or is it because you're scared you're going to be bored? Like, and I think that comes down, I know there's some of your background, like the art of communication, of just realness, human to human. It's obviously wrapped in professionalism, but it's not salesy. It's not anxious. So for the advisors listening, like, what communication coaching can you give us that you've developed over time?
So you're absolutely right in that it is human to human. And the things that I have learned is it's about transparency. And you mentioned this earlier, which is, you know, sort of not guessing. And one of the biggest mistakes that I see in just sort of in business communication in general, but also as I do like sort of sales coaching and building out sales systems for companies, is that so often people will not ask the difficult question and then guess at the answer. And then they'll be wrong. And so, like, not knowing and making guesses is, you know, probably the biggest, you know, stumbling block that people create for themselves, when instead just sort of building the confidence to ask the question and explain why they want to know. Well, if I'm here to help facilitate, you know, you getting your best outcomes, I need to know what that looks like to you beyond my piece of the pie, because I might be able to see connections to that that are unrelated. And I say the same thing in, you know, sort of sales coaching of, you know, asking about what their process looks like for making a decision. Oftentimes folks are, you know, hesitant to ask, well, I don't want to get too much into their personal life. But if your job is to facilitate them making a decision and you don't ask them, well, who else is going to be involved in this? Well, do they need to hear from me so that I can explain why this might be a good idea? I don't want to make you explain it to them. Like, if you don't get at the who are the other stakeholders and what will your process look like? How long do you expect this to take? If you don't ask all those questions, you don't know. And then you're just guessing. And when you're guessing, you're not making the best possible decisions.
Yeah. And I've found certain questions, if asked up front, are much more well received than if you are down the path and there's friction and it's like, well, you didn't even set the rules up front. Like, why are you annoyed that they aren't taking action, as opposed to you saying, hey, if we accomplish X, Y, and Z, are you ready to make this decision?
Yeah.
That's professionalism up front. If waited till later, all of a sudden you come across kind of like a jerk. You're like, why are you pushing me?
That's right. Well, and it's very interesting that people sort of fall into roles. And if you start with, you know, asking, you know, really expansive questions instead of saying like, well, I'm going to wait till I've built enough rapport to ask that question. And instead it's, you know, let them know that you're going to be inquisitive and ask lots of things so that gives you the ability to answer. then you set the rules of the engagement, and they know that you're going to ask questions and that you're going to be inquisitive, and that you're going to then gain more knowledge that you'll use to help them versus, yeah. As you say, if you're just kind of going down the checklist of what it would take to sell them, you know, a mutual fund, and then suddenly you're like, well, what do your kids think about what you're going to do with your business? Like that feels out of left field, like, because you've set up the rules of the engagement and then violated those rules.
Yeah, one thing I had, this was a couple years ago, is I would have these financial planning engagements that would be like 2 or 3 months, and they would turn into 5 or 6 months because they weren't giving me the stuff. And I finally realized, I was like, wait, up front, I'm allowed to tell them, hey, before we get started, I have to get your buy-in that when I ask you for something, you can get it to me within 2 to 3 days.
That's right.
Are you ready for that? Changed everything. Because before it was like, I didn't even set the rules. Like, yeah, I'll get it to you when I can. But now I say, because this is a 3-month engagement, you are getting a plan delivered in 3 months. My hope is that it's a complete one. Mm-hmm. And for it to be complete, I need to make sure I get all this stuff in the next 2 weeks. Are you okay with that? And we all of a sudden, all those issues went away because we just shifted our order and just had more direct conversations.
Well, and there's a psychological thing that happens in their head. When they hear themselves say, yes, I'm okay with that, then from then on, you not only have permission, but you are encouraged. You're fulfilling the rules of the engagement by following up. Whereas if you don't, if you say, yeah, whenever you can get it to me and sort of take that approach, then you're violating those rules. If you start to say, look, man, you've been sitting on this for 2 weeks. Like, and so just changing that and them hearing themselves agree to it changes the nature of the relationship.
Would you coach us up on the SEPA? I think sometimes I know advisor buddies, and there was this point in my career where I was like, my default was like, get another designation.
For sure.
But what I've also learned is the clients don't really even know. Like, I could probably drop my CFP tomorrow. It's the confidence and the swagger that came with it, more so than the fact it's on my card, that helps me get the results. If somebody's like, the SEPA is the best thing ever, it's going to make me, you know, Mark. Where would you say, hey, take it because the information's great, or hey, don't take it yet. Do this first.
So the information is great now. And so I came at it with a very specific point of view, which was specifically thinking about, you know, marketing and sales and how to add value to that. And that is, you know, a tenth of the, you know, of what's covered in there. And it's sort of no joke certification in that, like, you know, it's about 30 to 40 hours of structured training that they want you to be live in. It's a proctored exam. I had to film my whole desk area to make sure I wasn't cheating. They keep the camera on you the whole time. If you go to the bathroom, you have to put a note on your chair, like in bathroom, back in five. Like, so it's a no joke test. It's not the hardest test. But so when is it worth it? You know, I would say for folks that gain that swagger, as you say, that confidence that, well, I've been through the course, I now feel like I've got the bearing. It's pretty good. I think it's very good for that. The one thing that I would advise, and this is a common critique, I'm a big fan of EPI, and I've done some things with them, but the program makes it sort of feel like as soon as you go through this, you're going to be ready to go out there and advise, this $100 million business on, you know, how to go through a sale. That's a tough leap. Do you have the foundation that it would take to go out and do that? Yes. But in that 30 hours of coursework, you're going to identify, wow, I sure need a tax expert if I'm going to be advising, you know, companies that have complicated tax, or I sure need a legal expert if I'm going to be advising companies that have complicated legal. And not only that, but how are you going to find those clients? No one goes and does a Google search and hires the SEPA that's closest to them.
That's a good point. Yeah.
They go to their network of advisors and say, who do you know that would be good at this? So if you don't have that type of referral network, you shouldn't expect that getting the certification is going to open a new, you know, revenue stream for you. But I would say if you're finding yourself in conversations with these other expert advisors that are advising maybe your clients as it gets, you know, as it pertains to, you know, implications for exiting, and you want to up level, you know, your conversation, it's a great way to do that. And then just sort of know, I know where all the bodies are, or not all the bodies, I know where, you know, all the blocking and tackling. I know the rules of the game and I can play the game. But in the same way that you're never going to be the tax expert that, you know, someone, you know, might use for other things, or the legal expert that they might use for other things. If you're serving a specific role just on their personal finances, the same thing's true for their business.
That's great. Good. Mark, I appreciate you, man. I hope for everybody listening, this is encouraging, that you don't need to become the expert overnight. There is a process, but I think tomorrow all of us can level up our conversations with business owners, because I do think there's missed opportunities there. One for referrals. It's like, hey, my guy, my gal talks about that.
Yeah.
They should help you, or at least increase the confidence you have sitting in those rooms, because it is a financial planning engagement waiting to happen. It's a great future prospect, but you just have to lean into it. So appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.